Yeah, are you ready to go?
As ready as I'll ever be.
Awesome.
So many,
So
so many, so
many
damn books.
Hello out there in listener land. My name is Christopher. This is So Many Damn Books, a blessing, a curse, a podcast. I am welcoming Ling Ling Huang into the Zoom version of the damn library. Ling Ling Huang is a writer and violinist. She plays with several ensembles, including the Organ Symphony, Grand Teton Music Festival Orchestra, Pro Musica, and Experiential Orchestra, with whom she won a Grammy Award in 2020. And she is also the newly minted debut author of Natural Beauty, a short, punchy, incredible sci-fi horror extravaganza, takedown of the beauty industry. Welcome. I'm so excited to be talking to you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me and for preparing a wonderful drink recipe for me to
Oh,
enjoy.
thank you for that segue. I did have a very good time coming up with a cocktail inspired by your book. So I am calling it the Holistic Spirit Soother. And I was just thinking about, because your book is all about the beauty industry and this particular sort of cultish. I mean, like everybody, my aunt and uncle are Kiehl's people. You know, they're always talking about how wonderful Kiehl's hand lotion is and give as gifts. You know, I know that people become cultish about any of their really beloved beauty products, but this takes it into a completely new direction, your novel. So I didn't want to, I was thinking about trying to make something sinister, but I decided to just think of the health industry. And so this is muddled cucumber, mint simple syrup, Saint Germain, lemon juice, aloe vera drink, and vodka. Because, you know, vodka's the cleanest liquor.
It is the cleanest liquor.
And you made one.
Yeah, I did. And the aloe vera is so hydrating, so that's great.
Yeah.
My skin, I don't know if you can tell, but it's glowing more by the minute as I drink this. And
That's
this.
what it would say next to the cocktail at their at one of their events. Have your skin glow for the entirety of the proceedings.
Yeah.
Yeah, aloe and cucumber both remind me of spa treatments. And I've also had someone come over to me at a party and extol the virtues of lemon juice and water. They were just like, I try to have like 10 lemons a week. So I just feel like lemon juice also has its own type of cult. So that's the birth of this drink, the Holistic Spirit Soother. I think it's so refreshing tasting. I think this is a really nice one if you want to join in and make one of your own at home. Like you did. It's
I
so cool
agree.
that you made one.
Oh, I'm gonna be making this all the time. It's so great. I can use the cucumber slices to put on my eyes after.
It's
My
yeah.
parents actually are like lemon water cult people.
Oh,
Every phone call, I feel like they're like, I start the day with hot water and lemon. I'm like, shut up. I haven't heard that from you since yesterday.
yeah.
But it's fine. I know they just want me to be healthy.
Yeah, they
So.
want you to live your longest, healthiest life as possible. And that's hot water with lemon,
Yeah.
right there. That's how you do
And this will be my version of that
it.
daily.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the best thing to start your day with. Maybe not the vodka part of it. By now, you've probably heard about a meal kit or two. Podcasts love to tell you about meal kits. The thing is, as someone who uses HelloFresh, it is pretty cool to talk about something that I started using long before they paid me to. I like cooking a variety of things, but I end up buying ingredients that I won't use all of. And HelloFresh's pre-portioned ingredients cut down on your food waste by a lot. It's one of my favorite things about the service. It doesn't even matter if you're a good cook, you'd be surprised how easy it is to cook well when everything is measured out for you and you have a picture of every step. I turn it on when we're tired of takeout and uninspired by the universe. And you can actually learn a couple techniques to bring to your own cooking. It's really great. Anyway, help yourself out in the kitchen and help the show out by giving HelloFresh a try. You want to go to HelloFresh.com/SoManyDamnBooks50 and use code SoManyDamnBooks50 for 50% off. Plus, your first box ships free. That's HelloFresh.com/SoManyDamnBooks50 and use code SoManyDamnBooks50 for 50% off. Plus, your first box ships free. Enjoy cooking. But I know of one thing that is good to start your day with, and that is buying books. It's another one of those great segues. It's time to celebrate the rampant consumerism of what did you buy? What did you buy? Have you gotten any? You just had your book release party. So you were at a bookstore, I assume, recently.
Yes. Such a dangerous place to be when they so I had my first book tour event last night at Powell's.
Oh, and so cool.
It was on the third floor. Yeah. When I first moved to Portland, all I wanted was to go to the Pearl Room, which is where all the art books are. And I was so excited for that, but it was closed for the pandemic. So the event was there last night. And at the end, they were like, you have a 20% discount. And you have 5 minutes because we close in 5 minutes. So I was just running around.
Oh, it's like supermarket sweep.
Yeah. Oh man, I wish, or whatever the one guy is in, that would have been so fun. but I just picked this up because I loved the title, Gollum Girl. I have no idea what it's about, but it's a really striking cover. I have just been learning about golems in Jewish mythology. My partner is Jewish, and last night was Pesach, Passover. So I figured I should, check it out. And it looks amazing. The blurbs are great. There's lots of pictures, which I always like in a book. So.
Yeah, I haven't grown out of that either. I love golems in books. I remember there was one in Cavalier and Clay by Michael Chabon. And then, of course, The Golem and the Djinn by Helen Wicker. Incredible novel.
Oh, I have not read that, but I will
have to. I
think
there's even a sequel to that one that I didn't get into, but what a great...
Amazing.
You're following those two characters as they make their way through, I think, 19th century New York, although my memory might fail me there.
I really have no idea what it's about.
You judged the book by its cover. That's what you did.
I did. Yikes.
No, I do that all the time. In fact, one of the books that I bought or was sent to me has this absolutely gorgeous cover, Katie Simpson Smith's The Weeds, which such a good concept for it's two women were connected. They're connected by botany. And one is collecting plants in 2018 and one's collecting plants in 1854. And it's a list of the plants as they discover them and how it's like affecting their lives. What a cool concept.
That's amazing. I actually, the book that I'm reading now is Fen, Bog, and Swamp by Annie Proulx. I really love books about nature. So I saw someone reading that and it was on some social media and I added it to a list that I have because and the cover is so striking, but it looks like it was really poetic language inside as well. So
yes,
love.
The other book that I'm so excited about that just got sent to me is a sequel. It's the sequel to Vita Nostra by Marina and Sergei Diachenko. And they're a Russian husband and wife writing couple who have been writing in Russian for years and years. I mean, they have like so many books, but they've only had a few translated into English. And I loved Vita Nostra, which was about a character named Sasha who goes to a magic school, but it's completely against her will. She does not want to go. they're holding her mom like in magical hostage because she's just such a good magical conduit that they really need to teach her magic. So it's all horrible magic. Like, it's just like extracting things from her. And this is the sequel to it called Assassin of Reality. Cool title. And so I'm very, very excited about it. I was one of those people on Twitter. Anytime that they tweeted out something, I was like, any word on your trans? Because I know this is a whole series. There's a few that have already been written in Russian. So I'm like, where's the translations? You got us. Yeah. You did it. Vita Nostra is amazing. I'm so excited to dive into Assassin of Reality.
That sounds great. I'm adding that. That sounds so fun.
It is. It is fun, as brutal as the magic is, the magic system. I am so excited to be talking to you about your new book, Natural Beauty. Can you tell the listeners who might not be familiar what it's about? I'm sure you're practiced at this point.
Yes, but I am supremely awkward, so it never gets easier. But Natural Beauty is the story of a really talented pianist who has to give up a pretty promising career because her parents need care. And so then she ends up in this very well-paying wellness and clean beauty store. And it's fascinating and unregulated. And she drinks the Kool-Aid hard. But things are a lot more sinister than they seem. And so as she keeps working there, a lot of things start to unravel and she starts to see this like dark underbelly to this veneer of beauty and stuff that's been sold to her as self-care.
Yeah. Oh, and it's so exciting because, first of all, it's these short little chapters. I mean, I love that. You eat them up like candy and it's such a good, like, just one more, just one more. Can you talk about the decision to do that? I know in James Patterson's masterclass, he talks about he doesn't want any chapters to be longer than 4 pages. He's like, that's too long. Is that something that animates your writing?
I did kind of want a more propulsive, urgent kind of feeling to it. So I like to write in really condensed little things because I love the idea of kind of a cliffhanger or even just some idea that you leave where people want to keep going. And for me personally, when I read, if I see a lot of blocks of text, I get really intimidated. So shorter chapters just appeals to me as a reader. That was probably the main motivation for that. But yeah. I did love the idea of people kind of binging it. And I feel like, you know, when the episodes of a TV show are shorter, it definitely sucks me in more. And then suddenly I'm like, I have been here for 10 hours.
Right. But they're so short. You know, like, yeah. It's just 30 minutes more. I completely understand that. And it kind of feeds into, I mean, one of the most popular, I feel like, guiding principles I hear for writing all the time is to write the book that you want to read. That is that what you feel like you've done here? Is that a guiding spiritual principle for you as well?
This book started, this is probably another reason it was short. Like, I wish I were one of those authors who like uses a gorgeous quill and like original like papyrus sourced from, I don't know where you source papyrus, but unfortunately, a lot of this was composed on my notes app. And
that's while fantastic. I was commuting.
So I think that, and I was working in the wellness and clean beauty industry while I was trying to make it as a freelance violinist in New York. And so I had these long commutes from where I was living in like a little hovel to this amazing store that Holistic is kind of based on. And on these commutes, I would just be thinking about where I was coming from and where I was going, both career-wise and home store-wise. And that's kind of, you know, so this book really started as just kind of observations, how I was treated by my coworkers and customers and how they treated me and other coworkers differently, things like that. So that probably, maybe it was more like an exorcism, the way I was writing it in these little notes. So I'm sure that contributed to the kind of like readability in terms of smaller chapters, as well as, so maybe not something I like to read, but something I needed to write in the moment.
Yeah. You mentioned that you're a violinist and your character plays piano. I feel like what I've read about this book already is that a lot of people are talking about the beauty industry side of it, but I feel like you're also sort of putting the classical music industry also under the knife and under your microscope. That seemed just as important. Can you talk a little bit more about that world and maybe its mirrored disillusionment?
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate that you are seeing that or that's resonating with you, because I definitely see a lot of parallels between the classical music industry, the beauty industry, and the American dream, because they all kind of, you know, they pretend that if you just work hard enough, you look the way that everyone else looks, or you'll sound good enough to be on these stages. You'll be able to work your way to some kind of belonging. And I've found that to be incredibly untrue for all three. I felt like it would be too kind of on the nose to write about classical music and to kind of put it under the knife in that way. So hopefully people are picking up on the fact that they're similarly kind of outdated in what they require and what they look for musicians. There's so much I love about the classical music industry, especially the music itself, but it's so difficult to make it as a musician. It requires so much work in the same ways. It requires sacrifice, and it requires kind of like a sterilization of your soul almost to make it. You know, you spend all this time practicing to figure out how to express your voice. And then when it's time to get an orchestra job or something, they do not want you to sound like you. They want you to sound like what they're looking for. And I don't remember the statistic, but it's like probably 17 auditions or something before you win a job. Wow. And that means years, and you pay for your own flights and your own hotel. And it can be debilitating, especially if you've already, you know, been in conservatory forever and have student loans. And for me, that audition process and everything is similar, like the sterilization I see in the pursuit of homogeneous beauty. So they're all kind of similar to me. But I love classical music so much that I really did want to insert it into the book. And I quit piano a really long time ago, but there's so much music that I wish I had learned. So I got to at least write about a lot of that music.
So you quit piano in favor of the violin?
I didn't feel like I could do both well. I mean, I definitely was practicing 8 to 10 hours for a lot of my own conservatory training. Wow. So to do two instruments, I was not, I mean, there are those people, right, who are like, I am majoring in violin, piano, and I'm also doing med school. Nope, no problem. I feel like there was like one in every school who was like that. Mm-hmm. But that was not me. I needed to focus on one thing. And piano, you know, every orchestra needs like 30 violinists, but maybe one or two pianists at most. So it's much easier to get a job as a violinist.
So it's a pure capitalistic desire to focus on the violin.
Yes.
I don't actually
capitalism wins.
Well, I mean, I loved what you were putting in for a pianist, because I also am a erstwhile piano player. I finished playing when I was 15, I think, though, so a long, long time ago. However, I felt like you were capturing something really special in just like describing the technique, which seemed like just so lived in and something that only someone who truly had been playing piano would be able to like capture, that there would be different ways that you could move your finger to get a different type of note. That all of that stuff was super wonderful and resonating for me.
Oh, that's great. My dad is a piano teacher and my mom is a violin teacher. So part of me always feel like I chose like her side. But in a lot of the writing of the piano technique and stuff, especially, I got to sneak in things that he had taught me, and my love of him and the music we learned together definitely informs a lot of those passages.
So the main character's parents are also music teachers. So you've really put a lot of yourself in this, but how have they reacted to the book?
Well, when I first told them that I got a book deal, they were really excited. I didn't tell them I was writing a book beforehand.
Oh.
Because I didn't ever want to disappoint them by it not materializing. Mm. But they were so excited. And then within a week, it turned into like every phone call, besides the like hot water and lemon, mm-hmm. right? They were like, is it nonfiction? It's not a memoir, right? Like,
it's not about us,
they
right?
They ended up getting scared, yeah. But so it's not really about them, but some of the aspects of them that I love the most are in there, and they haven't read it yet. Yeah, they have a copy that they're, I think, trading off and reading slowly, but they did come to America, I guess like 30 years ago now. They don't feel the most confident reading. So they're making their way through it at their pace, and I'm excited for them.
It does make my next question even more, I'm going to say poignant, but there's the sexual journey for this character is central to this book. And it is a fascinating one because her sexuality is so fluid. Can you talk about depicting that and bringing that to the page?
I think a lot of this book ends up being kind of, you know, it's a fun Trojan horse of beauty and all of this frothy stuff, but it does try to explore race and identity and some of these deeper things. And growing up, it took me such a long time to figure out that I was queer because I couldn't tell if I had like a fixation with whiteness or if I was queer. And I didn't feel like I've really read anything like that before. I'm sure it exists, but I haven't come across it. And so I wanted to give my main character this and the fact of being unnamed, just a couple of the things that I've really felt in my life and haven't seen represented, I wanted to put into the page. So yeah, that'll be really fun for my parents to figure out. I don't think they will care. At one point, you know, when I was in conservatory, I didn't have a boyfriend or something, and my mom just was like, "Are you lesbian?" and it really felt in that moment that if I had said yes, she would have been like, "Oh, okay. Well, at least that explains the whole not having a boyfriend."
You know? Right. That it would just be the information that she was missing.
Yes. Data points.
Right. I mean, it's interesting because I feel like I see that in her journey, where it starts with very relatable sort of straight sex from an app, you know, like that sort of Tinder hookup type of thing. And then it goes into this other relationship that's like it's a friendship with really fuzzy boundaries, and you're not sure if like, do I love this person or are they just my best friend? Like, I don't know. So I feel like that journey is like reflected really interestingly in the book.
I feel like there is a thing with female friendships, at least in my experience, where there are moments where suddenly maybe the boundaries that you have as like just a friendship dissolve, and then the contours are kind of fuzzy, and you know, there will just be like these moments of confusion, and then your normal, you know, restrictions for yourself and the other person will cohere again. But that was always my experience before I had come out to myself. So
yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, you're in a room of people and you're like bringing up something like, you know how we all do this, and everyone's like, oh no, that's you're telling on yourself a little bit, and it's okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
Your book is full of body horror, and it runs the gamut from like Twilight Zone type of stuff to like Cronenbergian, like true horror. Do you find the pursuit of beauty always terrifying or inherently like gross?
I don't. I think that there are a lot of, you know, there are innocuous things, maybe, but even, you know, even like a sheet mask, you can think of it as like a Band-Aid for like, you know, if you feel like you can't actually afford healthcare and you're like, well, but this sheet mask will make me feel like I can care for myself somehow. Mm-hmm. So we have all these Band-Aids. So that's kind of more innocuous, but it's still, you know, it's not actually fixing anything. And then you have things that are like really meant to change you at a cellular level. I feel like we are using a lot of cutting edge science right now. There are things that are like, this skincare product has been backed by NASA. And it's like, this seems like a waste of
NASA,
you know. Yeah, NASA really cares about my pore size. So things like that, it's like, is it really good that we're trying to alter ourselves on such a deep level? And you'll see these diagrams of like, you know, if you put something topical on, it goes here, but then like our product goes all the way down here. And you're like, is this like gonna mess with my bone density? Like what's happening? So I think that it is a little horrifying how far we're going in that direction. Potentially horrifying. I mean, potentially great. Like some of these products, I feel like it's like a social business. Like we're going to help you. We're going to deliver collagen to your bones from a mist, but it's also, we're treating burn victims who can't be touched. So they need a mist. And that's why we're selling you this expensive product. It's to fund the actual research that we need, you know. There's like, it's very complex. But I think that there's a lot of it that is potentially just horror, and there's a lot of, I mean, the clean beauty and wellness industry, when I was working in it, it is truly unregulated. As long as the marketing looks amazing, it really could just be some guy making it in his basement. And it's not like it's a clean basement, you know, it's just a normal basement. So there's cause for concern.
And I think it's really interesting how it is couched in altruism. Like we discovered this on the path to helping people grow new limbs, and that's great, but also it'll really make your fingernails pop, you know. is like, it's like an interesting dichotomy where they're like, look at, you know, it's for good, it's, and you're supporting us for good. Has writing a book that was so critical of this industry, has it helped you parse it? Has it changed your connection to your own beauty routine?
It definitely has. Because when I worked there, I got shots in my butt. Like it's, you know, it's such a not normal retail job to work in wellness. You know, if you have a pop-up and you're not even questioning, like I was like, of course I'm gonna have shots in my butt. Why not?
From my employer. Of course.
Yeah, of course. I was fully in. I didn't question, I mean, this is true of my whole life. Like growing up, I didn't really question the things that were sold to me as self-care and as bettering myself. And eventually I realized that if I were to ask the question would be answered with better is Caucasian. And so, you know, I'm still a skincare and beauty junkie. Like I definitely still use a lot of products, but I ask a lot more questions. And I have a lot less expectations. Like I don't believe that these solutions that are marketed for everyone can honestly help everyone, and maybe not even anyone, not to the extent that they often say. And it's been great, kind of moving into a place where there's like a lot of hiking trails and stuff. And I try to spend less time in front of mirrors and screens in general, so that I remember there. I read this great book, Easy Beauty, where I learned about the concept of unselfing by Iris Murdoch, and that really changed my perspective. And I'm trying to relate to things more and just kind of look outside myself. So that's probably been the biggest thing, because probably the worst thing about the beauty industry is that they've made themselves seem like they're totally necessary for your life. And that chains you to this like appearance labor, and this idea of your identity and self-worth being related to the performance of your gender. And all of it's just so distracting from the real things we have to actually deal with. So it's nice to ask those questions.
Yeah, and it's nice to ask that question and then, you know, get out of the stream once you've asked it in some ways. Can you talk to me a little bit more about unselfing, the Iris Murdoch idea? I haven't heard that term before.
Sure. Well, obviously she will talk about it the best. And Chloe Cooper-Jones, who wrote Easy Beauty, talks about it, just writes about it really wonderfully. But I think I'm going to paraphrase this so badly. I'm so sorry, everyone who's a fan. But she was experiencing some kind of insecurity or anxiety, which I have a lot of. And I think, you know, maybe out of a window or something, she saw this kestrel. And in that moment, she just, you know, it felt like an out-of-body experience reading it, because she had this recognition of this other being and a totally different intelligence and just this wonder at this thing that was totally outside of herself, gave her a different perspective. And so that's how I understand unselfing. So I'm trying to do unself care by going on hikes as much as I can, just hanging out with my dog and being with different intelligences that don't try to sell me things at every moment.
What's your dog's name? What kind of dog do you have?
I have a Cocker Spaniel Poodle, or as they say in Australia, Spoodles.
I prefer that to the other thing that people call them.
Then Cockapoo, right?
Yeah. Spoodle's so much cuter.
Poodle is adorable. His name is Boba, which whenever I tell my family, they're like, you're so predictable. But I love going to like a dog park and everyone's like, this is my dog, Jeffrey. And I'm like, this is Boba.
One of my favorite parts of your book is this moment where it really feels like she goes through the looking glass and we're in this upside down of plants and beauty science. It's completely unreal. And it just feels like you just dialed everything to 11 and then found like 12 and 13. Can you talk about like going somewhere unexpected and what you did to ensure that your reader would follow you there?
I mean, it is my hope that the reader will follow me there and that it's not too chaotic. I think it's one of my favorite moments in a lot of media that I've encountered. Like one of the most memorable moments in a movie for me is in Parasite, which, you know, maybe spoiler alert if you haven't seen it, but there's there, you know, you're in this beautiful glass house the entire time, and there's suddenly a moment where you go down these stairs, or like, you know, in Jane Eyre, where there's suddenly like the attic and there's like someone there. All these moments that are so terrifying where things widen. And so this was my shot at that, and I decided to use an elevator, I think so. So for me, it made total sense. I wrote this in Gowanus, and I would walk by the canal daily, and, you know, people are like, it's been tested, it's positive for so many STDs, it's full of guns, it's, you know, there's so much that's kind of incredible and fabulous about the Gowanus Canal, that for me, it is totally believable that something like this could exist there. So that's what I did. And I do really hope that it's followable.
It really is. And, you know, the Gowanus Canal, I was just thinking about that pink dolphin that showed up, like, I don't remember, like 5 or 6 years ago. And that seems connected to holistic for sure. Like, they would have a pink dolphin that they were like, how did this dolphin get pink? Let's figure it out and see if we can get some of that for our skin.
I love that. That's probably escaped from their lab, honestly. And they definitely made it. Yeah. The things I've seen there are fascinating. There was just like a floaty, a Trump floaty once just going down, and we just watched it go down the entire canal. And they dredge every once in a while, and there's a little shop where they put in the window what fun thing they've dredged lately, which is
you know, it takes all kinds to get through this world. that's true. I'm curious how writing a book, publishing a book, has changed your relationship to reading. How's your relationship to your book stack these days?
Oh, well, I'm so excited to read. And I feel like with the amount of writing I've been doing, I haven't been able to read as much. And so part of me is like, oh man, I ruined it, like the thing that I love the most, like why I ended up doing all of this. No, I know that really soon I'll be able to read it. If anything, I almost like crave reading more. Like, what did I just, I knew that this would be a really chaotic time in my life, so I wanted something really comforting. And I love Susanna Clarke. So I like started, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell over again, and it's just been so fun to dive into a world that I find predictably fun and strange in all the right ways for me. So every kind of moment I have, I'm like so excited to read that. And then I do read things a little bit more with craft in mind. I'm so interested in how people are making me feel the things that I'm feeling rather than simply allowing myself to feel them. And sometimes that's great and sometimes it's not great. And it's been such an anxiety inducing time in general that I've been reading a lot of books that involve therapists lately, which I think that tells me something about my current needs in life.
Yeah. You actually brought to the show a book that features a therapist very very prominently. Beck Sahee's I Want to Die But I Want to Eat Tteokbokki. That book has been on my radar because of the title. It's extremely relatable, and as someone who just found out how to pronounce tteokbokki, I really love the dish. It's something that I'm always ordering, so I feel like I completely understand living for it, because yeah, it does seem like the type of thing that might be a stopgap and could get you to the next day. But it is an absolutely bizarre book. How did it cross your purview?
Well, I think I'd read something about how it was about, and now it's escaping me, the exact diagnosis. Is it dyspnea? I've never said this out loud, this word. But it's just this like slight depression. And I think I read something about that. I don't even remember where. I had just finished Big Swiss, which is also about therapy. And I think I was just like looking around for other books about therapy. And, you know, this one about someone who's just slightly depressed, it really caught my eye because there have been times when I've been like really paralyzed by depression, but I feel like most of the time I'm not like jumping for joy. And there is, you know, maybe it's just like, it's always raining in Portland or something, but I felt like I really related to being slightly depressed. And then I think it was in the bookstore and I just, you know, read the first page and I just closed it and I was like, I have to get this because this person is so self-aware and I feel like they're more honest with their therapist and with all of us in the writing of this book than a lot of people are honest with themselves. And I was really impressed all the way through with the honesty and bravery that it must have taken to write this and to put it into the world. So I thought it would be good for a time when I'm feeling insecure about something I'm putting out into the world. And also, you know, I feel like everyone could do with therapy. And I would love to finally go back on that journey again. But this was a great kind of intermediate step.
Yeah, I feel like this is very much like the type of book you give someone if they're like considering therapy. You could give them this book and be like, it could be like this for you. You know, and there was something else that she put a name to that I felt like I haven't gone to therapy myself, but I'd never heard this term before, akathisia, where she gets diagnosed with a little further on, this inability to sit still, that I feel like that is something that I was like, oh, and you know, that in tandem with depression felt very familiar to me in an uncomfortable way. But this book is sort of, it also like belies discomfort. It almost says like, don't be discomforted, like there'll be another therapy session and there'll be another like time where you can just talk about that thing. And it sort of tells you that therapy is a good thing that can help you. It's like a, you know, it's like the at the very base, because that's all this is. For people who aren't familiar, it is surprising because it really is just the conversations between the therapist and the narrator. How did you feel when you realized like, oh, okay, this is it. This is what the book is doing.
Yeah. I loved it because I think I just related to her so much. Like the fact that she's doing these transcriptions, it's because when she's talking to people, she can't focus on listening because she's so anxious. And for so much of my life, I've wondered if I'm a bad listener. And I realized that a lot of it is that I'm so anxious about what to say or if I'm responding correctly. I think maybe not to the level that she is, but it was just so relatable. And I had so much sympathy for her that this was where she was, that she needed to transcribe everything to even be able to hear it in a space that she didn't feel there was potential judgment. I love that there is no, like you said, there is a next therapy session all the time. And there's no like happy ending. Working on ourselves is just ongoing. And I kind of loved that. And even the therapist gets their say at the end. Oh man, should I not do like spoilers? I'm sorry.
First of all, I don't really believe in spoilers at all. But I also think that that's not quite a spoiler because that's not really what this book's about. This isn't a really, that's not a big surprise or something that it reveals. I'm like, oh my gosh, the therapist is speaking. It's just more like, yeah, that's just, of course, what happens next. I wanted to talk about, because I listened to this. It was read by this, read by Julie Lee, and I had it in my pocket. And when it says, like, the last chapter, it says epilogue. And I really thought, oh no, I've accidentally hit something in my pocket and, like, skipped a bunch of chapters or something, because it is such a dot, dot, dot ellipsis. Like, of course, this is just going to continue on like this type of ending.
Yeah. The end took me really by surprise. I don't know if I, like, shook the book to make sure I was in the right place with the bookmark. But because the transcriptions kind of stop pretty abruptly. And I think even after the epilogue, there are a few just kind of titled thoughts. And they're also candid, but they really are more like journal entries, and they might not have anything to do with the therapy that she's going through, but they really are indicative of her state of mind.
They also seem like something that was added far after the fact, because it seems like it's all part of the, because the audiobook started with her sort of marveling that this book has reached so many people and that it's being translated into so many different languages. And so it felt very much like, I can't believe that, you know, like, having that be the start of the book, like, I can't believe this book exists, and then it existing. and then ending with, like, and now, you know, it's come out. It just felt like a very sort of satisfying meta package as well.
I did notice as well that there is a second book.
Oh, there's we continue on.
I think so. Because I did recommend this to a friend who, as you said, like, you could recommend it to someone who's considering therapy. I did recommend this, and they were right there. And as soon as they started typing, they got the suicide hotline, right? And they were like, what are you recommending me? No. I was like, no, it's so cute. You just need to see the cover. You'll get it. And then when she showed it to me, there was a second book, I think. So now I have to read that.
Yeah, it's these simple sentences, they sneak up on you, because she's being so candid and she's being very casual about talking about just her life or being out, and she drank too much and she's not sure about how to stop drinking. And then there'll be a sentence that just comes, like, it's like right across the plate, like a fastball or something, where she says, like, sadness just feels like my natural state. And it's just like, oh, like, that's this huge sentence that just encompasses so much of just, like, oh, when you're feeling like that, it's just terrible when you're thinking like that is my baseline.
Yeah. It's amazing. I love that description that it's like a fastball, because I was taken aback sometimes at those, like, total lack of transitions. But it's also true to my feelings. So it hit me on a sentence level and emotionally as such a truth of what I've experienced, which was so impressive. I'm really interested in her thoughts, especially when she has these kind of interspersed journaled thoughts about her sessions. Mm-hmm. They were, I think, the most fascinating part to me.
I mean, this confessional is something that's always interesting to read. I think that was why I was so into the My Struggle series, the Carl of Knausgard's. But because, like, in that same way, they're like, I'm just putting down all of my thoughts, and sometimes they're great and sometimes they're terrible, but it's all out there for you to see, and you can weigh them if you want to. That's like it's an interesting way to write, and it's, you know, she goes a far more spare route. I would not compare them stylistically, but I think that they would understand each other's projects.
I actually got a Knausgard that I've never heard of before.
You picked that up yesterday? That's so funny.
Yeah. So Much Longing in So Little Space, The Art of Edvard Munch.
Oh, so. I really like him writing about art in particular. That's some of my favorite Knausgard.
Yeah.
Have you read him before?
I haven't. I know. I feel like a terrible... There's so many gaps in the things that I've read. And I try to... it's easy for me to feel like an imposter in a lot of ways as a newly published writer, but definitely having to own up to not having read like so many classics is another one of them. But I try to think of it as a very joyful thing that I have so much left to discover.
Right. You've got a whole world. And also, you know, let's take it easy. Who knows if Karl Ove Knausgård is a classic? Well, time will tell.
Time will tell.
I really like the series, but who knows? I feel like there's people listening who are just like, wait a minute. Let's talk. Let's classic. Hold on.
Yeah, I think all of us are canceled now. But I do feel like it's very divisive. And I feel like.
Yes.
Divisiveness is kind of adjacent to classic these days. So.
Yeah. I mean, anytime that someone, you know, marvels that I haven't read something, it's just like, I was just reading other stuff. Like, don't worry. I promise there was a book on my nightstand. Just because it wasn't Ulysses, I'm going to be okay.
Yeah. Another classic I haven't read. But I mean, there's so much practice time that goes into violin, which is always my excuse for when I haven't read anything.
I'd like to know about that, about when did you add a writing practice into your violin practice? Like, how did the writing come into it? When did you decide it was time to try your hand and secretly write a novel and not tell your parents?
Well, I've always read a lot. I mean, you wouldn't know it from our conversation just now. Whenever I was in a practice room, and even when I was, you know, like in fourth grade, I was always with a book because it was my favorite practice break. And so I really think of music and writing as kind of translating between the two. So I first started writing when I wanted to invite a lot of my English class friends to a recital I was giving. So I was already in conservatory. I didn't want to write the normal program notes that a lot of, like, we're required to write program notes, which just give, you know, the historical content of the pieces. And I don't know, I find a lot of them to be really dry. And a lot of these friends were kind of intimidated by going to a classical music concert because they, you know, it wasn't something they were super familiar with. So I wanted to cater to them and not in a way that would dumb anything down, because they're extremely intelligent, complex people. So I tried to, you know, do something in their language. So for the four different pieces, I wrote like a poem, I wrote a Russian short story, and just two other pieces to go with the music I was playing. And that was so fun. And it kind of opened up something where every time I listen to music, because there are no words in classical music for the most part, my mind is just free to put words in or to think of any image. And so I started writing in that way. And I, on these commutes where I was writing on my notes app, I was often listening to classical music. And so that's how the music elements snuck in there. And so then it just accumulated and became this thing. I think I was afraid to write a novel, but I moved to New York. I wouldn't even have said this aloud to myself, but I was wanting really badly to be a writer and to try writing a novel. So I feel like I had to kind of scurry and do it on notes and all these things for me to not be intimidated by it. And then putting it all in a Word document, it was fine because it was already done for the most part.
And so now you've got these views of like the beauty world, the clean beauty world, and the classical music world, do you feel like you've got a view of the publishing world now, and how do those stack up?
Yeah, the publishing world has been so wild. I think there's just so much I don't know, and there's still so much. I think a really popular question for me to everyone on any one of my teams is there an industry standard for a dot, dot, dot? Like, how to say thank you? Like, should I get flowers for people? How do we feel about cookies? Or like, I'm so grateful for this journey and to be in this field that I'm constantly afraid of losing it or messing up somehow, especially since I feel like there's so much I don't know. Mm-hmm. Because there is so much, even in the classical music world, that I feel like it's, you know, if you put your stuff in the wrong place in front of where someone usually unpacks their cello or something, like it can cause a whole kerfuffle for the whole orchestra and people will hate you. Like there are just such little things, or so maybe it's PTSD from that, but there's just a lot of fear that that I'm taking into the publishing industry, which is healthy. But for the most part, it's been a dream. I feel like, you know, I have nothing to compare it to, but I feel really lucky with how I've landed. And yeah,
I've been in this industry for a long time, long enough to have like disillusionment cycles, you know, where I'm like, oh, books. And then I'm back. Books. I completely understand. And as a mostly books person, I'm glad that the books are treating you well as you've gone from world to world.
We can talk in a year. I think being a musician, I know that there will be times when I don't love the thing, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the reason I wanted to try writing, I was so burnt out I was 12 years in conservatory. And I think in the last year or two, I had 4 to 5 performances a week and 8 to 10 hours a day. I mean, even by then it was probably 4 to 6, but it's unsustainable to like really love fervently something all the time.
Yeah.
And so I fully expect that, you know, I'm not going to be super excited about writing or reading all the time. But something I can take from practicing violin is that discipline and that focus when you don't want to do something, and just trusting that the love will come back. So.
That's great. That makes me, you know, extremely hopeful for a second novel, a follow-up, because this one was great. And I'm looking forward to more here. I mean, I guess there was talk of it being adapted as well. How's that process? Are you excited about the music side? Is that something that you're like, hey, I want to do something?
I'm so excited about the music side. I think we're a long way off from that.
Sure.
But there's an amazing showrunner and writer involved, and I'm just so excited to see what they do with it. It's the team behind Yellow Jackets and Constance Wu are adapting together.
Wow.
So I have names that I would love for the music aspect, but if they ask me, yeah, but
that's very exciting. Yellow Jackets. Ooh, what a show. That's really cool. Actually, why don't we actually move into recommendations, because that's the portion of the show we're at now. Do you want to recommend something to the people?
Sure. I do love TV so much. So I can say that I'm the last two shows that I really loved were The Last of Us and Extraordinary Attorney Wu.
Oh.
Which is a K-drama about an autistic lawyer. It's, you know, it's not always great that our depictions of neurodivergent individuals are like the really brilliant, like savantish ones.
Sure.
But I think it's amazing that a South Korean show is, you know, based kind of on neurodivergence, because it is kind of an unforgiving place in terms of mental adversity. So mental stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Both of those shows, The Last of Us, of course, everyone flipped for a while. And then I've heard a little bit about Extraordinary Attorney Woo. That one's on Netflix. Yes. Yeah.
It was my chaser for The Last of Us because it would be so intense. Like now I am watching Yellow Jackets and Succession. And so my chaser has been Unstable, which was really fun. Also on Netflix.
I want to recommend the new Barbara Kingsolver. I don't feel like I actually, many people need my cosign, but it's something that I don't know if all you ever read of Barbara Kingsolver was The Bean Trees, which is what I read of hers. This book totally just ate me alive. Like I didn't want to do anything but read the book. That was and it was such a great. Demon Copperhead is the new one. And it is sort of her loose retelling of David Copperfield. And I don't know how close it hews because I've never read David Copperfield, but I did feel that sort of like epic. You're following someone as they succeed and then are brought low by an opioid addiction. And it's sort of about that that world. And I just completely fell into it. I was telling a friend of mine that like opening the book felt like when you first like get into a really nice hotel and have a king size bed, like it's just like, oh, I'm going to get into that and I'm just going to stay there for a long time. When you see like this really hefty Barbara Kingsolver novel, that's what it felt like. I just felt like I was in the hands of someone so confident and she was just like, I'm going to let this unspool at the pace it needs to come. Truly, truly wonderful. Very one of those great reading experiences that I'm already excited that I had this year.
That's amazing. I can't wait to pick it up.
And I am absolutely recommending Natural Beauty. Go and pick that up right now. And, you know, I really like it when people support the show on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/smdb and you get all the episodes of the show without any of the pesky ads. That's cool. And you also get little extra episodes, mini episodes when I remember to upload them. And then I'm working on a special little thing to send to the people that pledge $10 a month, who are amazing. And also, I will be starting a book club soon. So there's many, many cool things happening over on the Patreon, patreon.com/smdb. And that's it. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. This has been a total blast. And I hope everyone picks this book up.
Thank you so much for having me.